It is 26 minutes after the hour, a Tuesday morning, and it's a, well, we call it a transcendent Tuesday because this is a day when we rise above all the small stuff, which does not include Dr. Don Clark. He is not small stuff by any means. Dr. Don.
Oh, you're saying that I'm large? I mean, you know, this
well, I'm saying you rank as significa here.
Okay.
Yeah. Most recently, we've been deep into the book of Daniel. And in fact, unless I've lost count, this is like part 13. And we're reaching the end of the book. And I'm not as confused as I used to be about Daniel because it is so in-depth, so meaty, so interesting as the history of Gentile civilizations, which I'd never looked at it that way before. And so now we're going to kind of review part of chapter 11. If you'd like to follow, I dare you to follow along. Open your Bibles to Daniel and see if you can keep up with Don here.
See if you can follow along with this.
Yeah, and we'll do chapter 12 and maybe wrap it up. We'll see. Don, in the book of Daniel, we've gone through multiple visions and dreams. We've gone through multiple kings and leaders and changeovers in kingdoms. Babylon gave way to the Persians, the Medo-Persian Empire. Medo-Persian Empire gave way to Alexander the Great. And then when he died, four of his generals took over various territories and ran. And then the Greeks, well, they were the Greeks. So the Greeks finally got kicked out by Israel at some point. But where are we as we end chapter 11 and head toward chapter 12?
I'm going to pick it up at verse 23 of chapter 11, and then we'll roll into chapter 12 here. We're pretty much at the end times now in this vision that has been given to Daniel. And we think through Gabriel. Gabriel seems to be the messenger that's delivering these visions and then and sometimes helping to interpret.
Gabriel's fascinating because he's in the form of a man, and yet he came in flight. So I'm picturing wings. I don't know that that's the case, but I'm not sure what kind of an apparition, a vision an angel presents. Maybe anything he wants to.
Yeah, and maybe he's not limited to, obviously, the laws of physics as we know it.
But if he's there to communicate, he can't be too scary, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he was scared. Now, remember that Daniel was scared when this last vision that he had, he saw someone that looked like a man, but he had fire in his eyes. So, you know, it's not necessarily a friendly looking dude that that always comes to visit. But in this case, he's outlining man's history. And so let's just pick it up with chapter 11, verse 23. And it says, at the latter end of their kingdom. Now, whose kingdom? The kingdoms of the kings and the last times and everything, the latter days, when the transgressors have reached their limit. So there is a limit to transgressing and to evil that God will put up with before, obviously, Jesus's second coming. And it says, a king of bold face, that is fierce countenance, one who understands riddles, dark secrets, shall arise. So we're talking about the Antichrist. He is fierce consonant, bold face. You know, he's probably a bold faced liar is what he is. And when it says he understands riddles, dark sentences, he is very much into the occult and very much satanic in nature. Why is that? Because Satan is empowering him. And it says, his power shall be great, but not by his own power. Thereby, you know, he's empowered, like I said, in this case, by Satan. And then shall cause fearful destruction and shall succeed in what he does and destroy mighty men and the people who are the saints. Now, the people who are the saints, the holy people, that's referring to... not necessarily to us. I mean, you know, we are the saints, obviously, but he's talking about Israel. So this is specifically mentioning, you know, Israel as the holy people, or the people who are the saints. 25, verse 25, by his cunning he shall make deceit prosper under his hand, and in his own mind he shall become great. He shall magnify himself in his heart. So by this we understand that he's extremely deceitful, and he is not only extremely deceitful, but magnifying himself means that he is full of pride, very boastful, and he has a superego. And so these are some of the characteristics that when you see people like this, they are really, you know, operating from the kingdom of darkness. They are not operating from the kingdom of light. Because, you know, God resists the proud, and that resist in that verse is really kind of pushing you away. So pride is not really in the kingdom of God. So it's in the kingdom of darkness, because if you remember in Isaiah 14, there are five I wills that Satan says he's going to eventually ascend above the Most High, which means he wants to be God. Hmm. And part of the Antichrist spirit is people who adopt the Antichrist spirit want to be gods, and they want to be over people. They want to control people, and this is their characteristic, and they pick it up none other from Satan himself.
Okay, I want to double check. I think I'm losing you on the text. This is chapter 11, verse 25.
Well, it was. You were losing me because my notes jumped to chapter 8, verse 20, 25.
Okay.
Because we were talking about him. So mm-hmm. Let's continue with verse 36, shall we, of chapter 11.
Yes.
And the king shall do as he wills, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak astonishing things against the God of gods. So he is very much an antichrist. This is the antichrist that we're talking about. As I said, very boastful, very prideful. He shall prosper till the indignation is accomplished, and what is decreed shall be done. So there is a period of time, there is God's going to allow so much to happen before this fellow has to pay for basically his sins in adopting Satan as his father. In 37, he shall pay no attention to the gods of his fathers or to the one beloved by woman. He shall not pay attention to any other gods, for he shall magnify himself above all. And I really encourage, the listeners to go back to Isaiah 14. These are some of the same things that Satan, the five I wills that are in Isaiah 14, are being presented here again, that this fellow wants to be put in charge of everything. Now, from previous visions, for example, the statue and the 10 toes, we know that this guy is going to be over all of the earth. He does it by deceit, by flattery, by any means possible. And, of course, he's not adverse to killing people and wiping people up out. When it says beloved by women, really talking about Israel there again. So this guy is very satanic. I shall be like the Most High, as it says in Isaiah 14. And that's what he's doing, for he shall magnify himself above all.
Another contextual question. This appears to me to be Daniel talking to Darius the Mede. If you go back to verse 1, is this Daniel speaking or is this Gabriel?
No, this is Gabriel telling him who the Antichrist is going to be, this fierce person who's coming onto the scene.
Okay, that first verse is
confusing. But it's in the future, so, you know. Mm-hmm. It's as far as Daniel, well, it's still in the future for us, as far as we know. But, you know, it's in that's what I'm saying. I mean, the book of Daniel covers all of Gentile history to the very end. End of this age. Let's clarify that, because you know, when the new heavens and the new earth merge, there will be no end. But that's yet to come.
You know, who disappears in influence here is Israel. They seem to be the center of attention, but not the doer. You know, they're passive.
Not the doer. They are receiving. We would have to go and do a study of Revelation, because it's revealed there, the latter part after the first three chapters of Revelation, which talk, you know, the chapter 2 and 3 in Revelation talk about the seven churches. Well, we are part of the seven churches right mm-hmm. now, but it's in chapter 4, it says after these things, which means, okay, we're switching now from the Christian church to something else, and it gets very Hebrewish, yeah. Or it gets very, you know, the sense is very Israeli-like.
Well, John would do that. That's typical of John, so.
Yeah, and so the theme switches from the churches, the Christian churches, to Israel and the Great Tribulation. The tribulation, the Great Tribulation, is about Israel, interestingly enough. But that's for another time. Maybe we'll delve into that sometime in the future.
Like Daniel is one foot and Revelation is the other foot.
Yes.
They go together.
These two books pair quite nicely. Of course, you got Ezekiel that you need to talk about and other things. But they dovetail nicely, because we get a little bit more information in Revelation than we're getting here. We're getting just a real overview summary, and then Revelation kind of lays things out for us. So where are we? I think 38. And he shall honor the god of fortresses instead of these, a god whom his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver. Now, the phrasing here, with precious stones and costly gifts, he says, he shall honor the god of fortresses instead of these, a god whom his fathers did not know. It gives you kind of a flavor that maybe this guy's of Jewish descent, has some Jewish heritage, and he's forgetting the God of his fathers, who would have been the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or, you know, as we know, the one mm-hmm. true God. And so he comes against all of that. He shall dwell with the strongest fortresses with the help of a foreign god.
You've just convinced me. I've never noticed that before, but this does imply that he is Jewish, because it refers to whom his fathers did not know.
Yeah, gives you that flavor. And if, you know, if you have an open mind, if you're looking for things like this, little hints, it's interesting. God, you know, places little hints, and he says, search the scripture, you know, diligently. Mm-hmm. And he rewards those who search diligently. A casual reading, you're not going to necessarily pick that up. But these type of things, you know, I always ask the question, okay, why is that there? Why do we need that information? And so anyway, it makes Bible study exciting for me, and I hope it is helping some of the listeners as well. It says, he shall dwell with the strongest fortresses with the help of a foreign god. Now, of course, the foreign god is Satan himself. Those who acknowledge him shall load with honor. He shall load with honor. He shall make them rulers over many and shall divide the land for a price. So that, I think, concludes. We got one more verse. So he is dividing the land. He's dividing Israel. The land talked about here is Israel. So one of the characteristics of the Antichrist, or one of the things we can look for, is someone who comes on the scene, the world leader. Now, remember, the 10 horns and three of them disappear, and then this little horn comes up. Well, this is the little horn.
And that's Revelation, right?
That
the 10 horns.
You know,
yeah.
We read it earlier in Daniel.
Okay.
You know, he is the little horn, and the horn represents a rulership. And so he then takes over ruling all of the earth. But one of his characteristics is he's dividing the land of Israel. Verse 40, it says, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, but the king of the north shall rush upon him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen, with many ships, and he shall come into the countries and shall overflow and pass through. Referring to his might that he has, and he's got an unbelievable, you know, army, if you will, you know, behind him. He shall come into the glorious land.
Go ahead. Let's deal with this now, too, because you say north. Earlier in Daniel, north meant basically Syria, and it was like the Seleucid kingdom of Greek. But at this time, this is the end times. This is further on. Could this be the Gog and Magog of Revelation?
It very well is.
Uh-huh.
Yes, indeed. So the north here, you know, could be Russia.
Yes.
Really?
So it is, we're talking further north than Syria.
Yeah, Gog and Magog are people, ancient people groups from the Caucasus area and the Black Sea area. And
right.
I can't think of anybody else from up north who would have many ships, but Russia just might.
Yeah, Russia definitely would. They would have to come, not only ships, but planes and everything else, you know, that you could think of to come upon this little land called Israel to attack them. So to get a better picture of that, you really have to go to Ezekiel, which I'm not jumping to, obviously. You have to go to Ezekiel, 38 and 39, read those chapters through. Those are very symbolic as well. But you get the flavor that, okay, the people from the north are indeed from the area of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how we're doing on time. Verse 41, he shall come into the glorious land. Now, whenever you hear glorious land, that is Israel. So he shall come into Israel. We can reinterpret that. And tens of thousands shall fall, but these shall be delivered out of his hand. Okay, so we know that there is a remnant in Israel that will be delivered out of his hand. Where do they go? Edom, Moab, and the main part of Ammonites. So that's where they head. So And in Revelation, you know, and other parts, for example, I mean, in Jesus himself, you know, said, when you see these things, he's talking to the Jews. When you see these things, drop everything and run to the mountains. Hmm. Because when you see the abomination spoken of in Daniel, the abomination that makes desolate, that is, when the Antichrist goes into the temple and slaughters a pig on the altar and goes into the temple and declares himself as God, run for the hills. Because that is the sign that he is coming to destroy the people of God. So he shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall become ruler of the treasurers of gold and of silver and of precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Cushites shall follow in his train. So, and so let's just finish up the chapter. Let me see. Do I have some notes? I've already talked about that. But news from the east and the north shall alarm him, and he shall go out with great flurry. To destroy and devote many to destruction. And he shall pitch his palatial tents between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end with none to help him.
The mountain is Zion. Good news, this has got to be the plains, Gaza, and the Shevelah. That's the hillsides just west of Jerusalem.
Yes. So it is between the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea where this guy is pitching his tent. And, you know, tents, maybe relatively speaking.
Dead Sea or Mediterranean Sea?
The Mediterranean
Sea.
Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea.
You know, this pattern that we're describing in chapter 11 almost mirrors the pattern of the Seleucids and the Ptolemies and the fighting from north to south. And encamping in Israel, it's almost like that was the small scale, the hint of what is to come on a much larger scale.
Exactly. And history repeats itself. In mm-hmm. God's kingdom, he lets us know, ahead of time, like, here's a little microcosm of what's going to happen, for example. And, you know, the Battle of Jericho, what's so significant about the Battle of Jericho, for example, it's unusual. Extremely unusual. You take your army and you put your priest in the front and you walk around a city once every day for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, you walk around seven times. And then at the end, you shout and blow your trumpets. That is a sign, a foretaste of the tribulation period.
There's that number seven again. Yeah.
Yes.
Dare we move to chapter 12?
Do we have a little bit more time?
Why don't we save it for next week? We'll wrap up the series on Daniel next week.
And, okay, that sounds good.
There's enough to chew on for the time being, I
think. Wow.
So much stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of homework reading to do just in these.
So Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39, recommended reading, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website before we close off here. It's creationmoments.com, and Creation Moments is a ministry based in Minnesota. It's been around since the late 70s. And it's accumulated a library and archive of scientific information that explains and enables you to teach, if you choose to, the biblical story of creation. And it's based on science, which is what makes it weighty in this day and age. Not so much symbolism like we're talking about in the book of Daniel, but concrete science that supports what God says in Genesis. You might want to pay them a visit, creationmoments.com. Don, as always, we're grateful for what you bring us, and we'll look forward to next week and wrapping up our series on Daniel. Will you be ready?
Well, am I going to be ready?
Yes.
I'll be ready.
All right.
Now, we got to remember that, you know, we're starting in chapter 12. We're going to finish. Chapter 12 is relatively short, so we can cover it next week for sure.
We'll look forward to discovering that and what's in it. So, Don, have a great week. We'll see you then.
All right. Thank you. You folks have a great week, too.